hadn't even noticed. At dinner, she'd seen the expression flash across his face when he caught Aelin and Rowan smiling at each other. All of Aerobin's jabs and stories had failed to find their mark tonight, because Aelin had been too lost in Rowan to hear. She wondered whether the Queen knew. Rowan did. Adian did. And Aerobin did. He had understood that with Rowan, she was no longer afraid of him. With Rowan, Aerobin was now utterly unnecessary. Irrelevant. He's all yours. After Aelin had left, as soon as he'd stopped strutting about the house, convinced of his absolute mastery over the Queen, Aerobin had called in his men. Lysandra hadn't heard the plans, but she knew the Fey Prince would be his first target. Rowan would die. Rowan had to die. She'd seen it in Aerobin's eyes as he watched the Queen and her prince holding hands, grinning at each other despite the horrors around them. Lysandra slid her hand beneath the pillow as she sidled up to Aerobin, nestling against him. He didn't stir. His breathing remained deep and steady. He'd never had trouble sleeping. The night he'd killed Wesley, he slept like the dead, unaware of the moments when even her iron will couldn't keep the silent tears from falling. She would find that love again, one day, and it would be deep and unrelenting and unexpected. The beginning and the end, an eternity. The kind that could change history, change the world. The hilt of the stiletto was cool in her hand, and as Lysandra rolled back over, no more than a restless sleeper, she pulled it with her. Lightning gleamed on the blade, a flicker of quicksilver. For Wesley, for Sam, for Aelin. And for herself, for the child she'd been, for the 17-year-old on her bidding night, for the woman she'd become, her heart in shreds, her invisible wound still bleeding. It was so very easy to sit up and slice the knife across Aerobin's throat. Chapter 45. The man strapped to the table was screaming as the demon ran its hands down his bare chest, its nails digging in and leaving blood in their wake. "Listen to him," the demon prince hissed. "Listen to the music he makes." Beyond the table, the man who usually sat on the glass throne said, "Where are the rebels hiding?"
"I don't know! I don't know!"
the man shrieked. The demon ran a second nail down the man's chest. There was blood everywhere. "Do not cringe, spineless beast. Watch. Savor." The body that might once have been his, had betrayed him entirely. The demon gripped him tightly, forcing him to watch as his own hands gripped a cruel-looking device, fitting it onto the man's face, and began tightening.
"Answer me, rebel," the crowned man said.
The man screamed as the mask tightened. He might have begun screaming too, might have begun begging the demon to stop.
"Coward, human coward, do you not taste his pain, his fear?"
He could, and the demon shoved every bit of delight it felt into him. Had he been able to vomit, he would have. Here there was no such thing. Here there was no escape.
"Please,"
the man on the table begged.
"Please."
But his hands did not stop, and the man went on screaming. Chapter 46. Today, Aelin decided, was already forfeited to hell, and there was no use even trying to salvage it, not with what she had to do next. Armed to the teeth, she tried not to think about Rowan's words from the night before as they took the carriage across the city, but she heard them beneath every clop of the horse's hooves, just as she'd heard them all night long while she lay awake in bed, trying to ignore his presence.
"Don't touch me like that."
She sat as far from Rowan as she could get without hanging out the carriage window. She'd spoken to him, of course, distantly and quietly, and he'd given her clipped answers, which made the ride truly delightful, Adian, wisely, didn't ask about it. She needed to be clear-headed, relentless, in order to endure the next few hours. Aerobin was dead. Word had come an hour ago that Aerobin had been found murdered. Her presence was requested immediately by Tern, Harding, and Mullen, the three assassins who had seized control of the guild and estate until everything was sorted out. She'd known last night, of course. Hearing it confirmed was a relief. That Lysandra had done it, and survived it, but dead. The carriage pulled up in front of the assassin's keep, but Aelin didn't move. Silence fell as they looked up at the pale stone manor looming above, but Aelin closed her eyes, breathing in deep. One last time. You have to wear this mask one last time, and then you can bury Selena Sardothian forever. She opened her eyes, her shoulders squaring and her chin lifting, even as the rest of her went fluid with feline grace. Adian gaped, and she knew there was nothing of the cousin he'd come to know in her face. She glanced at him, then Rowan, a cruel smile spreading as she leaned over to open the carriage door. "Don't get in my way," she told them. She swept from the carriage, her cloak flapping in the spring wind as she stormed up the steps of the keep, and kicked open the front doors. Chapter 47. "What the rutting hell happened?" Aelin roared, as the doors to the assassin's keep banged behind her. Adian and Rowan followed on her heels, both concealed beneath heavy hoods. The front hall was empty, but a glass crashed from the closed sitting room. And then, three males, one tall, one short and slender, and one monstrously muscled, stalked into the hall. Harding, Tern, and Mullen. She bared her teeth at the men. Tern in particular. He was the smallest, oldest, and the most cunning, the ringleader of their little group. He'd probably hoped that she'd kill Aerobin that night they ran into each other in the vaults. "Start talking now," she hissed. Tern braced his feet apart. "Not unless you do the same." Adian let out a growl as the three assassins looked over her companions. "Never mind the guard dogs," she snapped, drawing their attention back to her. "Explain yourselves." There was a muffled sob from the sitting room behind the men, and she flicked her eyes over Mullen's towering shoulder. "Why are those two pieces of whoring trash in this house?" Tern glowered. "Because Lysandra was the one who woke up screaming next to his body." Her fingers curled into claws. "Was she now?" she murmured, such wrath in her eyes that even Tern stepped aside, as she stalked into the sitting room. Lysandra was slumped in an armchair, a handkerchief pressed to her face. Clarice, her madam, stood behind the chair, her face pale and tight. Blood stained Lysandra's skin and matted her hair, and patches had soaked through the thin silk robe that did little to hide her nakedness. Lysandra jerked upright, her eyes red and face splotchy. "I didn't. I swear I didn't." A spectacular performance. "Why the hell should I believe you?" Aelin drawled. "You're the only one with access to his room." Clarice, golden-haired and aging gracefully for a woman in her 40s, clicked her tongue. "Lysandra would never harm Aerobin. Why would she, when he was doing so much to pay off her debts?" Aelin cocked her head at the madam. "Did I ask for your goddamned opinion, Clarice?" Poised for violence, Rowan and Adian kept silent, though she could have sworn a hint of shock flashed in their shadowed eyes. "Good." Aelin flicked her attention to the assassins. "Show me where you found him. Now." Tern gave her a long look, considering her every word. A valiant effort, she thought, to try to catch me in knowing more than I should. The assassin pointed to the sweeping stairs visible through the open sitting room doors. "In his room. We moved his body downstairs." "You moved it before I could study the scene myself?" It was tall, quiet Harding who said,
"You were told only as a courtesy."
And to see if I'd done it. She stalked from the sitting room, pointing a finger behind her at Lysandra and Clarice. If either of them tries to run, she said to Adian, gut them. Adian's grin shone from beneath his hood, his hands hovering within casual reach of his fighting knives. Arobin's bedroom was a bloodbath, and there was nothing feigned as she paused on the threshold, blinking at the blood-drenched bed and the blood pooled on the floor. What the hell had Lysandra done to him? She clenched her hands against their trembling, aware that the three assassins at her back could see it. They were monitoring her every breath and blink and swallow. How? Mullen grunted.
Someone sliced his throat open and let him choke to death on his own blood.
Her stomach turned. Honestly turned. Lysandra, it seemed, hadn't been content to let him go quickly. There, she said, and her throat closed. She tried again. There's a footprint in the blood.
Boots,
Tern said at her side.
Big. Probably male.
He gave Aelin's slender feet a pointed look. Then he studied Rowan's feet where the prints loomed behind her, even though he'd probably already examined them. The little shit. Of course, the footprints Kaol had deliberately left were made with boots different from what any of them wore. The lock shows no sign of tampering, she said, touching the door. Does the window?
Go check,
Tern said. She would have to walk through Arobin's blood to reach it.
Just tell me,
she said quietly, warily.
Lock's broken from the outside,
Harding said, and Tern shot him a glare. She stepped back into the cool darkness of the hall. Rowan silently kept his distance, his fey heritage still undetected beneath that hood. And it would remain that way so long as he didn't open his mouth to reveal his elongated canines. Aelin said, No one reported signs of anything being amiss. Tern shrugged.
There was a storm. The murderer probably waited until then to kill him.
He gave her another long look, wicked violence dancing in his dark eyes. Why don't you just say it, Tern? Why don't you ask me where I was last night?
We know where you were,
Harding said, coming to tower over Tern. There was nothing kind on his long, bland face.
Our eyes saw you at home all night. You were on the roof of your house, and then you went to bed.
Exactly as she'd planned. Are you telling me that detail because you'd like me to hunt down your little eyes and blind them? Aelin replied sweetly. Because after I sort out this mess, that's exactly what I plan to do. Mullen sighed sharply through his nose and glared at Harding, but said nothing. He was always a man of few words, perfect for dirty work.
You don't touch our men, and we won't touch yours,
Tern said. I don't make bargains with piece-of-shit second-rate assassins, she chirped, and gave him a nasty smile as she swept down the hall, past her old room, and down the stairs, Rowan a step behind. She gave Adian a nod as she entered the sitting room. He kept up his watchful position, still smiling like a wolf. Lysandra hadn't moved an inch. You can go, she said to her. Lysandra's head snapped up.
What?
Tern barked. Aelin pointed to the door. Why would these two money-grubbing whores kill their biggest client? If anything, she said over her shoulder, I'd think you three would have more to gain. Before they could start barking, Clarice coughed pointedly.
Yes,
Aelin hissed. Clarice's face was deathly pale, but she held her head high as she said, If you would allow it. The master of the bank will be here soon to read Arobin's will.
Arobin,
she dabbed at her eyes, the perfect portrait of grief.
Arobin informed me that we were named. We would like to remain until it has been read.
Aelin grinned. Arobin's blood hasn't yet dried on that bed, and you're already swooping in for your bequest.
I don't know why I'm surprised. Maybe I've dismissed you as his murderer too soon, if you're that eager to snatch whatever he's left you.
Clarice paled again, and Lysandra began shaking.
Please, Selena,
Lysandra begged.
We didn't. I would never...
Someone knocked on the front door. Aelin slid her hands into her pockets.
Well, well. What good timing.
The master of the bank looked as if he might vomit at the sight of blood-covered Lysandra, but then he sighed with something like relief when he spied Aelin. Lysandra and Clarice now sat in twin armchairs, while the master took a seat behind the little writing desk before the towering bay windows, Tern and his cronies hovering like vultures. Aelin leaned against the wall beside the doorway, arms crossed, Adian flanking her left side and Rowan her right. As the master went on and on with his condolences and apologies, she felt Rowan's eyes on her. He took a step nearer, as if to brush his arm against hers. She sidled out of reach. Rowan was still staring at her when the master opened a sealed envelope and cleared his throat. He spouted some legal jargon and offered his condolences again, which God's damned Clarice had the audacity to accept as though she were Arobin's widow. Then came the long list of Arobin's assets, his business investments, his properties, and the enormous, outrageous fortune left in his account. Clarice was practically drooling on the carpet, but Arobin's three assassins kept their faces carefully neutral.
"It is my will," the master read, "that the sole beneficiary of all my fortune, assets, and holdings should be my heir, Selena Sardothian."
Clarice whipped around in her chair, fast as an adder.
"What?"
"Bullshit," Adian blurted. Aelin just stared at the master, her mouth a bit open, her hands falling slack to her sides.
"Say that again?"
she breathed. The master gave a nervous, watery smile.
"Everything, all of it, is left to you. Well, except for this sum to Madame Clarice to settle his debts."
He showed Clarice the paper.
"That's impossible,"
the madam hissed.
"He promised I was in that will."
"And you are," Aelin drawled, pushing off the wall to peer over Clarice's shoulder at the small number.
"Don't get greedy now."
"Where are the duplicates?" Tern demanded. "Have you inspected them?" He stormed around the table to examine the will. The master flinched, but held up the parchment, signed by Arobin and utterly legal.
"We verified the copies in our vaults this morning. All identical. All dated from 3 months ago."
When she'd been in Wendlin.
She stepped forward. "So, aside from that teensy sum for Clarice, all of this, the house, the guild, the other properties, his fortune, it's all mine?" The master nodded again, already scrambling to pack up his case.
"Congratulations, Miss Sardothian."
Slowly, she turned her head toward Clarice and Lysandra.
"Well, if that's the case,"
she bared her teeth in a vicious smile, "get your whoring, blood-sucking carcasses the hell off my property." The master choked. Lysandra couldn't move fast enough as she rushed for the door. Clarice, however, remained seated.
"How dare you?" the madam began.
"Five," Aelin said, holding up five fingers. She lowered one and reached for her dagger with her other hand. "Four," another. "Three." Clarice hauled ass from the room, bustling after a sobbing Lysandra. Then Aelin looked at the three assassins. Their hands hung limp at their sides, fury and shock and, wisely enough, something like fear on their faces. She said too quietly,
"You held Sam back while Arobin beat me into oblivion, and then didn't raise a finger to stop it when Arobin beat him too. I don't know what role you played in his death, but I will never forget the sounds of your voices outside my bedroom door, as you fed me the details about Rourke Farron's house. Was it easy for you three to send me to that sadist's house, knowing what he'd done to Sam and what he was aching to do to me? Were you just following orders, or were you more than happy to volunteer?"
The master had recoiled in his chair, trying to make himself as invisible as possible in a room full of professional killers. Tern's lip curled.
"We don't know what you're talking about."
"Pity. I might have been willing to listen to some paltry excuses."
She looked at the clock on the mantel. "Pack your clothes and get the hell out."
Right now. They blinked.
What?
Tern said. Pack your clothes, she said, enunciating each word. Get the hell out. Right now.
This is our home,
Harding said. Not anymore, she picked at her nails. Correct me if I'm wrong, master, she purred, and the man cringed at the attention. I own this house and everything in it. Tern, Harding, and Mullen haven't yet paid back their debts to poor Aerobin, so I own everything they have here, even their clothes. I'm feeling generous, so I'll let them keep those, since their taste is shit-awful anyway. But their weapons, their client lists, the guild, all of that is mine. I get to decide who's in and who's out. And since these three saw fit to accuse me of murdering my master, I say they're out. If they try to work again in this city, on this continent, then by law and by the laws of the guild, I have the right to hunt them down and chop them into itty-bitty pieces. She batted her eyelashes. Or am I wrong? The master's gulp was audible.
You are correct.
Tern took a step toward her.
You can't. You can't do this.
I can, and I will. Queen of the Assassins sounds so nice, doesn't it?
She waved to the door. See yourselves out. Harding and Mullen made to move, but Tern flung his arms out, stopping them.
What the hell do you want from us?
Honestly? I wouldn't mind seeing you three gutted and hanging from the chandeliers by your insides, but I think it would ruin these very beautiful carpets that I'm now the owner of.
You can't just toss us out. What will we do? Where will we go?
I hear hell is particularly nice at this time of year.
Please, please,
Tern said, his breath coming fast. She stuffed her hands into her pockets and surveyed the room.
I suppose,
she made a thoughtful sound, I suppose I could sell you the house, and the land, and the guild.
You bitch,
Tern spat, but Harding stepped forward.
How much?
He asked. How much were the property and the guild valued at, master? The master looked like a man walking up to the gallows as he opened his file again and found the sum. Astronomical, outrageous, impossible for the three of them to pay. Harding ran a hand through his hair. Tern had turned a spectacular shade of purple.
I take it you don't have that much, Aelin said. Too bad. I was going to offer to sell it all to you at face value. No markup.
She made to turn away, but Harding said,
Wait, what if we all paid together, the three of us and the others, so we all owned the house and the guild?
She paused. Money's money. I don't give a shit where you get it from, so long as it's given to me. She angled her head toward the master. Can you have the papers drawn up today, providing they come through with the money, of course?
This is insane,
Tern murmured to Harding. Harding shook his head.
Be quiet, Tern. Just be quiet.
The master said.
I can have them made up and ready within 3 hours. Will that be adequate time for you to provide proof of sufficient funds?
Harding nodded.
We'll find the others and tell them.
She smiled at the master and at the three men. Congratulations on your new freedom. She pointed to the door again. And as I am mistress of this house for another 3 hours, get out. Go find your friends, get your money together, and then sit on the curb like the trash you are until the master returns. They wisely obeyed, Harding clamping down on Tern's hand to keep him from giving her a vulgar gesture. When the master of the bank left, the assassins spoke to their colleagues, and every inhabitant of the house filed outside one by one, even the servants. She didn't care what the neighbors made of it. Soon, the giant, beautiful manor house was empty, save for her, Adian, and Rowan. They silently followed, as she walked through the door to the lower levels and descended into the dark, to see her master one last time. Rowan didn't know what to make of it. A whirlwind of hate and rage and violence. That was what she'd become. And none of these piss-poor assassins had been surprised. Not even a blink at her behavior, from Adian's pale face. He knew the general was thinking the same thing. contemplating the years she'd spent as that unyielding and vicious creature. Selena Sardothian. That was who she'd been then, and who she'd become today. He hated it. Hated that he couldn't reach her when she was that person. Hated that he'd snapped at her last night, had panicked at the touch of her hands. Now she'd shut him out entirely. This person she'd become today had no kindness, no joy. He followed her down into the dungeons, where candles lit a path toward the room where her master's body was being kept. She was still swaggering, hands in her pockets, not caring that Rowan lived or breathed or even existed.
Not real,
he told himself.
An act.
But she'd avoided him since last night, and today she had actually stepped away from his touch when he dared to reach for her. That had been real. She strode through the open door into the same room where Sam had lain. Red hair spilled out from underneath the white silk sheet covering the naked body on the table. And she paused before it. Then she turned to Rowan and Adian. She stared at them, waiting, waiting for them to... Adian swore. You switched the will, didn't you? She gave a small, cold smile, her eyes shadowed. You said you needed money for an army, Adian. So here's your money. All of it. And every coin for Terrison. It was the least Aerobin owed us. That night I fought at the pits. We were only there because I'd contacted the owners days before and told them to send out subtle feelers to Aerobin about investing. He took the bait. Didn't even question the timing of it. But I wanted to make sure he quickly earned back all the money he lost when I trashed the vaults. So we wouldn't be denied one coin owed to us. Holy burning hell. Adian shook his head. How the hell did you even do it? She opened her mouth, but Rowan said quietly,
She snuck into the bank. All those times that she slipped out in the middle of the night, and used all those daytime meetings with the master of the bank to get a better sense of the layout, where things were kept.
This woman, this queen of his, a familiar thrill raced through his blood.
You burned the originals?
She didn't even look at him. Clarice would have been a very rich woman, and Turn would have become king of the assassins. And you know what I would have received? The amulet of Orinth. That was all he left me.
That was how you knew he truly had it, and where he kept it,
Rowan said.
From reading the will.
She shrugged again, dismissing the shock and admiration he couldn't keep from his face. Dismissing him. Adian scrubbed at his face.
I don't even know what to say. You should have told me so I didn't act like a gawking fool up there.
Your surprise needed to be genuine. Even Lysandra didn't know about the will. Such a distant answer. Closed and heavy. Rowan wanted to shake her, demand she talk to him, look at him. But he wasn't entirely sure what he would do if she wouldn't let him near. If she pulled away again while Adian was watching. Aelin turned back to Aerobin's body and flipped the sheet away from his face, revealing a jagged wound that sliced across his pale neck. Lysandra had mangled him. Aerobin's face had been arranged in an expression of calm, but from the blood Rowan had seen in the bedroom, the man had been very much awake while he choked on his own blood. Aelin peered down at her former master, her face blank save for a slight tightening around her mouth. I hope the Dark God finds a special place for you in his realm, she said, and a shiver went down Rowan's spine at the midnight caress in her tone. She extended a hand behind her to Adian. Give me your sword. Adian drew the sword of Orinth and handed it to her. Aelin gazed down at the blade of her ancestors as she weighed it in her hands. When she raised her head, there was only icy determination in those remarkable eyes. A queen exacting justice. Then she lifted her father's sword and severed Aerobin's head from his body. It rolled to the side with a vulgar thud, and she smiled grimly at the corpse. Just to be sure, was all she said. Part 2. Queen of Light. Chapter 48. Manon beat Astarin in the breakfast hall the morning after her outburst regarding the Yellowlegs coven. No one asked why. No one dared. 3 unblocked blows. Asterin didn't so much as flinch. When Manon was finished, the witch just stared her down, blue blood gushing from her broken nose. No smile, no wild grin. Then Asterin walked away. The rest of the 13 monitored them warily. Vesta, now Manon's 3rd, looked half inclined to sprint after Asterin, but a shake of Sorrel's head kept the red-haired witch still. Manon was off-kilter all day afterward. She'd told Sorrel to stay quiet about the yellow legs, but wondered if she should tell Asterin to do the same. She hesitated, thinking about it.
You let them do this.
The words danced around and around in Manon's head, along with that preachy little speech Alid had made the night before. Hope. What drivel. The words were still dancing when Manon stalked into the Duke's council chamber 20 minutes later than his summons demanded.
Do you delight in offending me with your tardiness, or are you incapable of telling time?
The Duke said from his seat. Vernon and Caltaine were at the table, the former smirking, the latter staring blankly ahead. No sign of shadow fire. I'm an immortal, Manon said, taking a seat across from them as Sorrel stood guard by the doors, Vesta in the hall outside. Time means nothing to me.
A little sass from you today, Vernon said. I like it.
Manon leveled a cold look at him. I missed breakfast this morning, human. I'd be careful if I were you. The Lord only smiled. She leaned back in her chair. Why did you summon me this time?
I need another coven.
Manon kept her face blank. What of the yellow legs you already have?
They are recovering well, and will be ready for visitors soon.
Liar.
A blackbeak coven this time,
the Duke pressed. Why?
Because I want one, and you'll provide one, and that's all you need to know.
You let them do this.
She could feel Sorrel's gaze on the back of her head. We're not whores for your men to use.
You are sacred vessels, the Duke said. It is an honor to be chosen.
I find that a very male thing to assume. A flash of yellowing teeth.
Pick your strongest coven and send them downstairs.
That will require some consideration.
Do it fast or I will pick them myself.
You let them do this.
And in the meantime, the Duke said as he rose from his seat in a swift, powerful movement,
prepare your 13. I have a mission for you.
Manon sailed on a hard, fast wind, pushing Abraxos even as clouds gathered, even as a storm broke around the 13.
Out. She had to get out.
Had to remember the bite of the wind on her face, what unchecked speed and unlimited strength were like. Even if the rush of it was somewhat diminished by the rider she held in front of her frail body bundled up against the elements. Lightning cleaved the air so close by that Manon could taste the tang of the ether, and Abraxos veered, plunging into rain and cloud and wind. Caltaine didn't so much as flinch. Shouts burst from the men riding with the rest of the 13. Thunder cracked, and the world went numb with the sound. Even Abraxos's roar was muted in her dulled ears. The perfect cover for their ambush.
You let them do this.
The rain soaking through her gloves turned to warm, sticky blood. Abraxos caught an updraft and ascended so fast that Manon's stomach dropped. She held Caltaine tightly, even though the woman was harnessed in. Not one reaction from her. Duke Parrington, riding with Sorrel, was a cloud of darkness in Manon's peripheral vision, as they soared through the canyons of the White Fangs, which they had so carefully mapped all these weeks. The wild tribes would have no idea what was upon them until it was too late. She knew there was no way to outrun this, no way to avoid it. Manon kept flying through the heart of the storm. When they reached the village, blended into the snow and rock, Sorrel swooped in close enough for Caltaine to hear Parrington.
The houses.
Burn them all.
Manon glanced at the Duke, then at her charge. Should we land?
From here,
the Duke ordered, and his face became grotesquely soft as he spoke to Kaltane.
Do it now, pet.
Below, a small female figure slipped out of one of the heavy tents. She looked up, shouting. Dark flames, shadow fire, engulfed her from head to toe. Her scream was carried to Manon on the wind. Then there were others, pouring out as the unholy fire leaped upon their houses, their horses.
All of them, Kaltane, the Duke said over the wind. Keep circling, wingleader.
Sorrel met Manon's stare. Manon quickly looked away, and reeled Abraxos back around the pass where the tribe had been camped. There were rebels among them. Manon knew because she'd tracked them herself. Shadow fire ripped through the camp. People dropped to the ground, shrieking, pleading in tongues Manon didn't understand. Some fainted from the pain. Some died from it. The horses were bucking and screaming, such wretched sounds that even Manon's spine stiffened. Then it vanished. Kaltane sagged in Manon's arms, panting, gasping down raspy breaths.
She's done, Manon said to the Duke.
Irritation flickered on his granite-hewn face. He observed the people running about, trying to help those who were weeping or unconscious, or dead. Horses fled in every direction.
Land, wingleader, and put an end to it.
Any other day, a good bloodletting would have been enjoyable, but at his order. She'd scouted this tribe for him.
You let them do this!
Manon barked the command to Abraxos, but his descent was slow, as if giving her time to reconsider. Kaltane was shuddering in Manon's arms, nearly convulsing.
What's wrong with you?
Manon said to the woman, half wondering if she should stage an accident that would end with the woman's neck snapped on the rocks. Kaltane said nothing, but the lines of her body were locked tight, as if frozen despite the fur she'd been wrapped in. Too many eyes. There were too many eyes on them for Manon to kill her. And if she was so valuable to the Duke, Manon had no doubt he'd take one, or all, of the 13 as retribution.
Hurry, Abraxos,
she said, and he picked up his pace with a snarl. She ignored the disobedience, the disapproval in the sound. They landed on a flattened bit of mountain ledge, and Manon left Kaltane in Abraxos's care, as she stomped through the sleet and snow toward the panicking village. The 13 silently fell into rank behind her. She didn't glance at them. Part of her didn't dare to see what might be on their faces. The villagers halted, as they beheld the coven standing atop the rock outcropping jutting over the hollow where they'd made their home. Manon drew Windcleaver, and then the screaming started anew. Chapter 49. By mid-afternoon, Aelin had signed all the documents the master of the bank brought over, abandoned the keep to its horrible new owners, and Adian still hadn't wrapped his mind around everything that she had done. Their carriage deposited them at the edge of the slums, and they kept to the shadows as they made their way home, silent and unseen. Yet when they reached the warehouse, Aelin kept walking toward the river several blocks away without so much as a word. Rowan took a step to follow, but Adian cut him off. He must have had a death wish, because Adian even raised his brows a bit at the Fey Prince, before he sauntered down the street after her. He'd heard their little fight on the roof last night thanks to his open bedroom window. Even now, he honestly couldn't decide if he was amused or enraged by Rowan's words.
Don't touch me like that.
When it was obvious the warrior prince felt quite the opposite. But Aelin, gods above, Aelin was still figuring it out. She was stomping down the street with delightful temper as she said,
If you've come along to reprimand—
Oh, she sighed. I don't suppose I can convince you to turn around.
Not a chance in hell, sweetheart.
She rolled her eyes and continued on. They walked silently for block after block, until they reached the glimmering brown river. A decrepit, filthy length of cobblestone walkway ran along the water's edge. Below, Abandoned and crumbling posts were all that was left of an ancient dock. She stared out across the muddy water, crossing her arms. The afternoon light was nearly blinding as it reflected off the calm surface.
"Out with it," she said.
"Today, who you were today, that wasn't entirely a mask."
"That bothers you? You saw me cut down the king's men."
"It bothers me that the people we met today didn't bat an eye at that person. It bothers me that you were that person for a time."
"What do you want me to tell you? Do you want me to apologize for it?"
"No, gods, no, I just..."
The words were coming out all wrong.
"You know that when I went to those war camps, when I became general, I let the lines blur too. But I was still in the north, still home, among our people. You came here instead, and had to grow up with those piece of shit men, and... I wish I'd been here. I wish Aerobin had somehow found me too and raised us together."
"You were older. You never would have let Aerobin take us. The moment he looked away, you would have grabbed me and run."
"True. Very true, but... the person you were today, and a few years ago, that person had no joy. Or love."
"Gods, I had some Adian. I wasn't a complete monster."
"Still, I just wanted you to know all that."
"That you feel guilty that I became an assassin while you endured the war camps and battlefields?"
"That I wasn't there. That you had to face those people alone."
He added,
"You came up with that whole plan by yourself and didn't trust any of us with it. You took on the burden of getting that money. I could have found a way. Gods, I would have married whatever wealthy princess or empress you asked me to, if they promised men and money."
"I'm never going to sell you off like chattel," she snapped. "And we have enough now to pay for an army, don't we?"
"Yes.
And then some."
"But that's beside the point, Aelin."
He took a breath.
"The point is, I should have been there then. But I am here now. I'm healed. Let me share this burden."
She tipped her head back, savoring the breeze off the river.
"And what could I ever ask of you that I couldn't do myself?"
"That's the problem. Yes, you can do most things on your own. That doesn't mean you have to."
"Why should I risk your life?"
The words were clipped.
"Ah."
"Ah, because I'm still more expendable than you are."
"Not to me."
The words were barely more than a whisper. Adian put a hand on her back. His own reply clogged in his throat. Even with the world going to hell around them, just hearing her say that, standing here beside her, it was a dream. She stayed silent, so he mastered himself enough to say,
"What exactly are we going to do now?"
She glanced at him. "I'm going to free magic, take down the king, and kill Dorian. The order of the last two items on that list could be flipped, depending on how it all goes." His heart stopped.
"What?"
"Was something about that not clear?"
"All of it. Every damn part of it."
He had no doubt she would do it, even the part about killing her friend. If Adian objected, she'd only lie and cheat and trick him.
"What and when and how?"
he asked. "Rowan's working on the first leg of it."
"That sounds a lot like I have more secrets that I'm going to spring on you whenever I feel like stopping your heart dead in your chest."
But her answering smile told him he would get nowhere with her. He couldn't decide if it charmed or disappointed him. Rowan was half asleep in bed by the time Aelin returned hours later, murmuring goodnight to Adian before slipping into her room. She didn't so much as glance in his direction as she began unbuckling her weapons and piling them on the table before the unlit hearth. Efficient, quick, quiet, not a sound from her.
"I went hunting for Lorcan,"
he said.
"I tracked his scent around the city, but didn't see him."
"Is he dead, then?" Another dagger clattered onto the table.
"The scent was fresh. Unless he died an hour ago, he's still very much alive."
"Good," she said simply, as she walked into the open closet to change, or just to avoid looking at him some more. She emerged moments later in one of those flimsy little nightgowns, and all the thoughts went right out of his damn head. Well, apparently she'd been mortified by their earlier encounter, but not enough to wear something more matronly to bed. The pink silk clung to her waist and slid over her hips as she approached the bed, revealing the glorious length of her bare legs, still lean and tan from all the time they'd spent outdoors this spring. A strip of pale yellow lace graced the plunging neckline. And he tried, gods damn him, he honestly tried, not to look at the smooth curve of her breasts as she bent to climb into bed. He supposed any lick of self-consciousness had been flayed from her under the whips of Endovier. Even though he'd tattooed over the bulk of the scars on her back, their ridges remained. The nightmares, too, when she'd still startle awake and light a candle to drive away the blackness they'd shoved her into. The memory of the lightless pits they'd used for punishment. His fire heart, shut in the dark. He owed the overseers of Endovier a visit. Aelin might have an inclination to punish anyone who'd hurt him, but she didn't seem to realize that he, and Adian too, might also have scores to settle on her behalf. And as an immortal, he had infinite patience where those monsters were concerned. Her scent hit him as she unbound her hair and nestled into the pile of pillows. That scent had always struck him, had always been a call and a challenge. It had shaken him so thoroughly from centuries encased in ice that he'd hated her at first. And now that scent drove him out of his mind. They were both really damn lucky that she currently couldn't shift into her fey form and smell what was pounding through his blood. It had been hard enough to conceal it from her until now. Adian's knowing looks told him enough about what her cousin had detected. He'd seen her naked before, a few times, and gods, yes, there had been moments when he'd considered it. But he'd mastered himself. He'd learned to keep those useless thoughts on a short, short leash. Like that time she'd moaned at the breeze he sent her way on Beltane. The arch of her neck. The parting of that mouth of hers. The sound that came out of her. She was now lying on her side, her back to him.
About last night,
he said through his teeth. It's fine. It was a mistake.
Look at me. Turn over and look at me.
But she remained with her back to him, the moonlight caressing the silk bunched over the dip of her waist, the slope of her hip. His blood heated.
I didn't mean to snap at you.
He tried. I know you didn't. She tugged the blanket up as if she could feel the weight of his gaze lingering on that soft, inviting place between her neck and shoulder. One of the few places on her body that wasn't marked with scars or ink. I don't even know what happened, but it's been a strange few days, so let's just chalk it up to that, all right? I need to sleep. He debated telling her that it was not all right, but he said,
fine.
Moments later, she was indeed asleep. He rolled onto his back and stared up at the ceiling, tucking a hand beneath his head. He needed to sort this out. Needed to get her to just look at him again, so he could try to explain that he hadn't been prepared. Having her touch the tattoo that told the story of what he'd done and how he'd lost Lyria, he hadn't been ready for what he felt in that moment. The desire hadn't been what shook him at all. It was just, Aelin had driven him insane these past few weeks, and yet he hadn't considered what it would be like to have her look at him with interest. It wasn't at all the way it had been with the lovers he'd taken in the past. Even when he'd cared for them, he hadn't really cared. Being with them had never made him think of that flower market. Never made him remember that he was alive and touching another woman, while Lyria was dead, slaughtered. And Aelin, if he went down that road, and if something happened to her, his chest seized at the thought. So he needed to sort it out, needed to sort himself out, too. No matter what he wanted from her. Even if it was agony.
This wig is horrible, Lysandra hissed,
patting her head as she and Aelin elbowed their way into the packed bakery, alongside a nicer stretch of the docks.
It won't stop itching.
Quiet, Aelin hissed back. You only have to wear it for another few minutes, not your whole damn life. Lysandra opened her mouth to complain some more. But two gentlemen approached, boxes of baked goods in hand, and gave them appreciative nods. Both Lysandra and Aelin had dressed in their finest, frilliest dresses. no more than two wealthy women on an afternoon stroll through the city, monitored by two bodyguards each. Rowan, Adian, Nezrin, and Kaol were leaning against the wooden dock posts outside, discreetly watching them through the large glass window of the shop. They were clothed and hooded in black, wearing two separate coats of arms. Both fake, acquired from Lysandra's stash for when she met with secretive clients.
"That one,"
Aelin said under her breath, as they pushed through the lunchtime crowd, fixing her attention on the most harried-looking woman behind the counter. The best time to come here, Nezrin had said, was when the workers were too busy to really note their clientele and would want them out of the way as quickly as possible. A few gentlemen parted to let them pass, and Lysandra cooed her thanks. Aelin caught the eye of the woman behind the counter.
"What can I get you, miss?"
Polite, but already sizing up the customers clustering behind Lysandra.
"I want to talk to Nelly," Aelin said. "She was to make me a brambleberry pie."
The woman narrowed her eyes. Aelin flashed a winning smile. The woman sighed and hustled through the wooden door, allowing a glimpse of the chaos of the bakery behind it. A moment later, she came back out, giving Aelin a she'll-be-out-in-a-minute look, and going right to another customer. "Fine." Aelin leaned against one of the walls and crossed her arms. Then she lowered them. A lady didn't loiter.
"So, Clarice has no idea?"
Aelin said under her breath, watching the bakery door.
"None," Lysandra said, and any tears she shed were for her own losses. "You should have seen her raging when we got into the carriage with those few coins. You're not frightened of having a target on your back?"
"I've had a target on my back since the day I was born," Aelin said, "but I'll be gone soon enough. And I'll never be Selena again anyway."
Lysandra let out a little hum.
"You know I could have done this for you on my own."
"Yes, but two ladies asking questions are less suspicious than one."
Lysandra gave her a knowing look. Aelin sighed.
"It's hard," she admitted, "to let go of the control."
"I wouldn't know."
"Well, you're close to paying off your debts, aren't you? You'll be free soon."
A casual shrug.
"Not likely. Clarice increased all of our debts since she got shut out of Aerobin's will. It seems she made some advance purchases and now has to pay for them."
Gods. She hadn't even considered that. Hadn't even thought about what it might mean for Lysandra and the other girls. "I'm sorry for any extra burden it's caused you."
"To have seen the look on Clarice's face when the will was read?
I'll gladly endure another few years of this."
A lie, and they both knew it.
"I'm sorry,"
Aelin said again, and because it was all she could offer, she added,
"Evangeline looked well and happy just now. I could see if there was a way to take her when we go."
"And drag an 11-year-old girl across kingdoms and into a potential war? I think not. Evangeline will remain with me. You don't need to make me promises."
"How are you feeling?" Aelin asked, after the other night.
Lysandra watched three young women giggle to one another as they passed a handsome young man.
"Fine. I can't quite believe I got away with it, but we both pulled it off, I suppose."
"Do you regret doing it?"
"No. I regret that I didn't get to tell him what I really thought of him. I regret that I didn't tell him what I'd done with you. To see the betrayal and shock in his eyes. I did it so fast, and had to go for the throat. And after I did, I just rolled over and listened until it was done. But..."
Her green eyes were shadowed.
"Do you wish you had been the one to do it?"
"No." And that was that.
She glanced at her friend's saffron and emerald gown. "That dress suits you." She jerked her chin toward Lysandra's chest.
"And does wonders for them, too. The poor men in here can't stop looking."
"Trust me, having larger ones isn't a blessing. My back hurts all the time."
Lysandra frowned down at her full breasts.
"As soon as I get my powers back, these things will be the first to go."
Aelin chuckled. Lysandra would get her powers back, once that clock tower was gone. She tried not to let the thought sink in.
"Really?
If it wasn't for Evangeline, I think I'd just turn into something with claws and fangs and live in the wilderness forever."
"No more luxury for you?"
Lysandra pulled a bit of lint off Aelin's sleeve. Of course I like luxury. You think I don't love these gowns and jewels. But in the end, they're replaceable. I've come to value the people in my life more.
Evangeline is lucky to have you.
I wasn't just talking about her, Lysandra said,
and she chewed on her full lip.
You. I'm grateful for you.
Aelin might have said something back, something to adequately convey the flicker of warmth in her heart. Had a slim, brown-haired woman not emerged from the kitchen door. Nellie. Aelin pushed off the wall and flounced up to the counter, Lysandra in tow. Nellie said,
You came to see me about a pie?
Lysandra smiled prettily, leaning close.
Our supplier of pies, it seems, vanished with the shadow market.
She spoke so softly that even Aelin could barely hear.
Rumor has it you know where he is.
Nellie's blue eyes shuddered.
Don't know anything about that.
Aelin delicately placed her purse on the counter, leaning in so that the other customers and workers couldn't see as she slid it toward Nellie, making sure the coins clinked. Heavy coins.
We are very, very hungry for pie, Aelin said, letting some desperation show. Just tell us where he went.
No one escaped the shadow market alive.
Good. Just as Nezrin had assured them, Nellie didn't talk easily. It would be too suspicious for Nezrin to ask Nellie about the opium dealer. But two vapid, spoiled rich women? No one would think twice. Lysandra set another coin purse on the counter. One of the other workers glanced their way, and the courtesan said,
We'd like to place an order.
The worker focused on her customer again, unfazed. Lysandra's smile turned feline.
So tell us where to pick it up, Nellie.
Someone barked Nellie's name from the back, and Nellie glanced between them, sighing. She leaned forward and whispered,
They got out through the sewers. We heard guards were down there, too, Aelin said. Not down far enough. A few went to the catacombs beneath. Still hiding out down there. Bring your guards, but don't let them wear their sigils. Not a place for rich folk.
Catacombs? Aelin had never heard of catacombs beneath the sewers.
Interesting.
Nellie withdrew, striding back into the bakery. Aelin looked down at the counter. Both bags of coins were gone. They slipped out of the bakery unnoticed and fell into step with their four bodyguards.
Well, Nezrin murmured. Was I right?
Your father should fire Nellie, Aelin said. Opium addicts or piss-poor employees.
She makes good bread,
Nezrin said, and then fell back to where Kaol was walking behind them.
What'd you learn? Adian demanded. And do you care to explain why you needed to know about the shadow market?
Patience, Aelin said. She turned to Lysandra. You know, I bet the men around here would cut out their snarling if you turned into a ghost leopard and snarled back at them.
Lysandra's brows rose.
Ghost leopard?
Adian swore.
Do me a favor and never turn into one of those.
What are they?
Lysandra said. Rowan chuckled under his breath and stepped a bit closer to Aelin. She tried to ignore it. They'd barely spoken all morning.
Adian shook his head. Devils cloaked in fur. They live up in the Staghorns, and during the winter they creep down to prey on livestock. As big as bears, some of them. Meaner. And when the livestock runs out, they prey on us.
Aelin patted Lysandra's shoulder. Sounds like your kind of creature. Adian went on.
They're white and gray, so you can barely make them out against the snow and rock. You can't really tell they're on you until you're staring right into their pale green eyes.
His smile faltered, as Lysandra fixed her green eyes on him and cocked her head. Despite herself, Aelin laughed.
Tell us why we're here, Kaol said,
as Aelin climbed over a fallen wooden beam in the abandoned shadow market. Beside her, Rowan held a torch high, illuminating the ruins and the charred bodies. Lysandra had gone back to the brothel, escorted by Nezrin. Aelin had swiftly changed into her suit in an alley and stashed her gown behind a discarded crate, praying no one snatched it before she could return.
"Just be quiet for a moment," Aelin said, tracing the tunnels by memory.
Rowan